cover the King James Version, that first reading from Acts that we heard today. May remember that that translation for this reading starts out, "Ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are too superstitious." In our NRSV that we read today, it's how extremely religious you are in every way. And you know that makes a difference. Well, what would you think if the first thing out of some stranger's mouth strongly implied you ignorant person? Would you be inclined to listen to them? I know I wouldn't. I'd be more likely to use some kind of a certain gesture. Most of us know that insulting people is not a very effective way of persuasive argument. Now, Athens at the time that Paul was there was a cosmopolitan intellectual city. It was faded a bit in glory from the days before the Roman conquerors, but it was still an intellectual and cultural landmark. There were a lot of religions represented there. Historical accounts indicate that a visitor would need to dodge around all the religious statuary in order to get up the hill to the Hill of Mars, Areopagus, where Paul was speaking. As our text says, in Athens, one would encounter not only Jews, but followers of Epicurean and Stoic philosophy. Followers of Christ hadn't really gotten there yet. So Paul encounters this rich plurality of religious and philosophical traditions. A little before today's reading, our translation says Paul was deeply distressed to see the city was full of idols. So he argued in the synagogues. Well, maybe a better sense of that text might be that he was intrigued or stirred to see the idols and reasoned or preached in the synagogue. See the difference? You may have heard it before, but it's worth saying again. Translation is the first act of interpretation. The process of choosing exactly the right words in one language to represent a sense in another language is interpretation. There's an Italian proverb, which I will probably butcher in my Italian, but it goes traditore, traditore, which means translator, traitor. Our translator seemed to have decided that Paul was being a lot like those street preachers we see on street corners or in the New York City subway, speaking rather combatively, which, as I mentioned earlier, might not be the most effective form of preaching, especially to smart, thoughtful people like the Athenians. Our text could actually go either way. For the moment, let's assume that Paul was not being rude or combative. He had training in rhetoric, the art of persuasion, and he intends to be as persuasive as possible up there on the Hill of Mars, where people go to talk philosophy and religion and make speeches. Just maybe what we hear in this passage is Paul's aha moment. He realizes that the people of Athens are fascinated with, longing for something beyond what they already know. Hence the statue to the unknown God. And he's intrigued by that. He's heard the language they use. That phrase, live and move and have our being, is actually from a philosopher Paul is quoting. And he realizes and preaches that this longing for an unknown, not visible God is none other than the God of the Jews and Christians, the creator of the earth, the world, and everything in it, including the human heart. These Athenians of the myriad religious statuary were seeking after the same God who raised Jesus from the dead. And he just can't wait to share that with them. They weren't wrong. They were looking for something, for someone, and he's got the answer. Now, sometimes we hear criticism that the church has gotten too political. But that word political comes from polis, city, more precisely the people. Maybe the church should be more political, not in a partisan sense. But in being the kind of place where ideas and experiences can be entertained, can be discussed, where one is listened to deeply, just as Paul listened to the Athenians. What sort of effect do you think that might have if every one of us went out of here and listened deeply? Recently at Harvard's Kennedy School JFK Jr. Forum, Arthur C. Brooks, who's the president of the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative think tank, described the political polarization in the U.S. these days as primarily due to contempt. He says that contempt is defined by social psychologists as the utter conviction of the worthlessness of another human being. And it has no resolution. It leads to a permanent animus between people. Mr. Brooks has done some writing with the Dalai Lama, and he said that when he asked the Dalai Lama about what to do when he feels contempt for another person, the answer he received was, practice warm-heartedness. Answering contempt with warm-heartedness. Now, Jesus saw people beyond the surface, saw folks in their essence, listened to them, treated no one with contempt. When Paul met the Athenians on the hill, the philosophers, he'd seen their religiousness, their monument to an unknown God. He heard their longing for transcendence, and instead of going on the attack with his rather formidable oratorical skills, instead of showing contempt for their pagan ways, he shared with them the gospel, the good news of the Lord he followed, using their existing experience of God, telling them of how their poets had all unknowing, written of the same God in whom we live and move and have our being, and invited them to also follow Jesus, crucified and raised. What sort of effect do you think it might have if each one of us went out of here and listened deeply, listened for the experience of God in the lives of people outside our walls, the lives of folks who don't go to church, lives of folks who might be quite different from us? What if we practiced warm-heartedness with them, shared our own experience of the God in whom we live and